welcome to New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. Each week I try to bring the latest and exciting aspects of our spiritual evolution to the audience here on BBS Radio. And this week I have a very exciting guest who is involved in that particular evolution of consciousness. He is the editor of Reality Sandwich, the website, and the founder of Soul Dish, and the head of the New York Gnostics group. His name is Jonathan Phillips. Jonathan, are you there?
Yeah, sure am.
Okay, thanks for coming on at the last minute here. And I want to talk to you about a lot of stuff that you're doing, like the Electric Jesus, and a whole explanation of what that is, and then let's also bring in like the ancient wisdom of the Gnostics and how it all ties together as we move forward into a kind of evolution of consciousness. But let's start with the Electric Jesus, okay? What do you mean by that?
Okay.
Are you doing with it?
First, I just want to go back and say I'm one of the editors at Reality Sandwich, just to give credit where credit's due. Daniel Pinchbeck, author of 2012, is the editorial director, and there's a wonderful crew there. But yeah, the Electric Jesus.
Do you want to tell us just what Reality Sandwich is for a second, now that we've talked about it?
Especially since you're talking about evolving spirituality, our tagline is Reality Sandwich, evolving consciousness bite by bite. And so what we're doing is focusing on the frontiers of art, science, technology, spirituality. Anybody out there doing amazing things to evolve our culture, we're blogging about them and trying to really create this cultural engine or incubator to expand this culture to a wider audience.
Right. That's great. I mean, that's sort of what I want to do and am doing with this radio show and my television show and my website, newrealities.com. So, I mean, I think of a lot of us seeing that this is our evolutionary path forward to come together and, I don't know, push the edge of the envelope into new discoveries about what's possible.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of spiritual awakening going on right now, and if you're becoming awake in Western context, oftentimes you're kind of lost or don't know where to go. So I feel very grateful for programs like this and the things you do, Alan, just because I was not expecting mystical experiences, and then when they came along, people like you helped me understand where I could go to pursue this further, and also that I wasn't crazy.
Mm. Well, thanks. And I think, you know, to call it even spiritual, I mean, what you said, a spiritual experience, in a way, that's, we need a new word for everything that's unfolding in our culture. Now, spirituality is almost obsolete to call it that. I mean, consciousness, people call it, but there's an awakening of a perspective that's greater than what we've previously known, and of the mind, of the actual human capacity to perceive, that's shifting somehow to a greater population.
Right. I also would like to say here that not only do I find the word spirituality limiting, like you're saying, but I also find it's not very savvy to a lot of people. They hear it and they turn off, they think of organized religion or things like that. And some places I find the word spirituality is actually almost worse than porn. Like, to give an example, I've seen colleges where they'll have speakers about, you know, pornography and women and these things, but the idea of actually bringing in a speaker talking about spirituality, that would be pretty crazy.
Well, you know, Edgar Mitchell calls it, he started the Institute of Noetic Science, he calls it non-local consciousness. I would say that's his word for what, you know, it's been called spirituality. Ken Wilber calls it the perennial wisdom, or Aldous Huxley calls it that. I don't know. We could call it consciousness. We could.
That sounds like a good dance party.
What does?
A word that sounds like a good dance party.
Right.
You know? Something right. Everyone wants to show up to and find out who they really are and what this universe is really about. But
you know, the problem is we're still functioning out of an old paradigm that's just fighting its way out of a sort of religious dogma And so spiritual, we don't want to definitely call anything religious, because that's definitely a bad word. So it's like spirituality is close, it's a little more evolved, but there's something more that we're all coming into as a collective that doesn't, in a way, have a name yet, you know?
Right, and I'm sure this is a dialogue we'll keep having, and maybe there's not a name. Maybe it's just the undefinable process of...
Well, I think when a thing is named, it becomes it becomes concretized, crystallized into a form, and then everyone can say, "Oh yeah, I think that's what paradigm shifters have always done." And artists have always done, actually, and this is something we should talk about here. But artists have always taken the unknown, defined it, they've brought it into form so other people can then recognize it. They've cognized it so other people can recognize it, and they can say, "Oh yeah, that's what I mean." So this is the challenge of the artist, to bring in the vagueness of what we're talking about and bring it into form so other people can then recognize their experience, you know?
Right. Oh yeah, and I almost, what you're saying makes me think how important it is right now to have like almost like word warriors for good, because I really feel like the last few years we have seen with the Bush administration, they are very savvy with language and articulating, creating these mantras of fear, you know, like war on terror or activist judges. And really, I would like to see the artists, we start claiming new language, creating it to spark like the positivity in the human imagination and the hope that we all have.
Well, that's what sort of what I've been saying, because the thing about an artist, he doesn't do it consciously the way the government and the politics, they do it consciously to manipulate the population. Artists do it unconsciously, almost to free the population, to free the mind, but they don't do it as a contrivance. They do it because, this is what I've been studying, they've tapped into the unknown. I think it was Ezra Pound that said the artists are the antenna of the race. And James Joyce said, "I go forth for the millionth time to forge in the smithy of my soul the undivided conscience of my people, of my race." So it's like the artist brings in the unknown just beyond their personality that gives the rest of society a way, shows the way. They're the like shamans of modern culture. So, I mean, I think giving the artist enough of a chance to combat the governmental processes and the manipulations of dictatorship frees the society.
Right. I agree. But I still think you have these shamans uploading savvy videos to YouTube and things like that. I mean, I think you still have to play the game a little bit, but just play it for the limitlessness, or as the Gnostics would say, the depth, the ultimate truth and those things.
No, you're right. That's absolutely right. We do need a little bit. It's just like, no, you're right. I think it's not just, "Oh, okay, here's my art." It's like we have to deliberately use the means we can in order to keep this evolution going. But don't you think it's building momentum? Something's kind of coming together. Maybe it's 2012. I don't know. What do you get that's going on here?
Sorry, what were you saying?
Like, where do you see it all going, and how do you see it all coming together?
Well, I can see what's happening with a lot of young people. I mean, I mostly hang out with, I would say, mid-30s and under crowd in a lot of the stuff I do, and people are waking up. Suddenly they'll have these moments of, like, who am I? What's happening? They'll have energy awakenings, or start seeing energy, or synchronicities just start to happen. And I think a lot of us are coming up there being like, "Whoa, we weren't even expecting this." You know, we grew up watching Conjunction Junction cartoons on TV. And suddenly, I just see this awakening, like light bulbs are flicking on, and we're suddenly realizing we need to start meeting. And I'm starting to see all these groups clustering together, like, they'll start being Reiki shares across the country. And yoga, there are now like over 18 million yoga practitioners in America alone.
Wow. Okay.
But I'm really seeing the sense of needing hubs to make this happen. And
I think it's great you're in, because I'm not so in touch. I'm sort of in touch with the other crowd who's also having these similar awakenings, but they might not be as active about it somehow. But I'm glad you're seeing. I mean, it just seems like it's a planetary epidemic in a good way, that people are having these awakenings.
Absolutely. And it, strangely enough, I also feel like it's happening in the technology, where before technology seemed to be somewhat of an alienating force. Now, with the Internet, you really can meet all these people experiencing these amazing things. In my Gnostic group, we joke that Wikipedia is the new Library of Alexandria, because anytime we want to see, like, the Liturgy of Mithras or the Gospel of Thomas, these things that were totally subverted and hidden for years, you know, 2,000 years, all we have to do is click on Wikipedia, and there they are.
I know. Isn't it amazing? So I think that is a real shift in the last few years where technology, you're right, where technology was seen as alien, as other, it's now a real key part of this next step we're all taking, and it's a dependable part where we can actually decentralize and stay connected and draw on the riches of knowledge of all time. It's an amazing advantage I think we have over any other time period.
I agree, and it seems much more organic and complex and kind of like chaos theory out there, actually working with us is wonderful members making it all work.
And I think that's the difference between the threat of war in the 60s, where everyone thought the Cold War, we're going to blow ourselves up, and these nations are fighting nations. I mean, we still have war, which is a total embarrassment to our galactic friends, I think. You know.
I agree. But
they're still doing the war thing. I mean, how primitive. It's awful. But what I think is the advantage is that we are now coming together as a global unity because of this invention, the Internet. I mean, and
right.
So where do you see it go? Okay, so we're coming together in these clusters of groups. People are having these awakenings. Where do you fit in with the Electric Jesus, and where do you think it's going?
Well, tell you, my experience started off as an activist. I had a lot of mystical experiences that kind of happened to me in Prague. Prague is this magical city drawn up on astrological lines and things like that. But when I left Prague, I said, oh, that was just like a dream. None of that really happened. And so I became an activist.
Would you want to talk about what actually happened to you? Because I think that's really, I mean, if you would care to share it.
Yeah, I mean, in short, I got very ill for 2 years. I thought I was going to be an invalid the rest of my life. I had a broken heart, and just things weren't going well. And because no Western doctors could heal me or even diagnose what was wrong with me, I finally said, okay, I'm going to have to try some of this woo-woo stuff. And through some really, I would say, miraculous healings, I ended up having my fifth chakra. I didn't know what a chakra was back then. The energy center open up, and within one day, I just felt this wave of energy coming through me after going to this homeopath through this mystical experiences. And I just cried out all this energy that had been blocked up there. And what do you know? The next day, I was totally happy again. I was hanging out with my friends at the bar. And that was the only time that they actually believed I was sick, was when I got healthy again.
Wait, so what was the actual mystical experience? The woo-woo stuff was the homeopathy, or was it the energy work?
It was a series of events. You know, this I learned was a process to kind of break down my rational, skeptical, linear thinking and show that there's more expanded possibilities. And the process actually involved going back to the woman who had broken my heart, who was learning this reflexology kind of intuitive healing therapy where you regress. And I had a very strong past life regression that came out and also had my heart chakra open at that time. And it was pretty amazing for a rational person like me, extremely skeptical, to see.
So you didn't believe in past lives or anything like that?
I didn't believe in anything.
And you didn't believe. You were just like, okay, science, you live, you're dead, and that's it, huh?
Yeah, and I'd say I had a pretty scathing sarcasm about a lot of that. But, you know, people who are like that are often the most spiritual. They're just in denial of it because they don't know or haven't experienced it.
So you had, I mean, how were you able to believe that this was actually your past life? What was that thing that opened you up to the truth of that possibility?
Well, when this healer had told me through this regression, oh, look, you're going to laugh, but 2,000 years ago, you were tortured in a past life for spiritual beliefs, da-da-da-da-da. And I was going to laugh at her because it just sounded so crazy. And then something, my mind just started doing this, like, fractal math of, like, my whole life without me doing anything and doing all the math of, like, why I was certain ways and felt this way when I was 3 years old. And then suddenly, I just started to cry, and then I started to laugh, and my heart chakra just completely opened. Colors came across the room, and there was this vibration of love and, like, thank you for finally articulating this. And my sadness hasn't been for just nothing. There's a reason behind this. And to have actually experienced that totally changed my perspective. And, you know, that gets into the Gnostic stuff, because they tell you, do not just believe things on faith. Faith can get you much further on your path, but if you just do faith, you're not going to know. Gnosis is direct knowledge, revelatory knowledge, and you have to experience it. No one can just tell you things are that way.
So that moment you had the gnosis, you had the knowing through your feeling sensation, but there was I always think there's a moment where we actually need to take somewhat of a leap of faith. I mean, you could have rejected all that and said, no, it's my mind, it's my imagination, but it was something in the feeling that made you actually go beyond the mind and sort of take a leap of faith into knowing, right? I mean, there was a moment there where you decided to just go with it.
Well, yeah, and the Gnostics actually have to tell the tale of Sophia, who kind of falls from grace and into material reality, but it's called a forgetfulness or drunkenness or sleep. And she's very desperate in this and calls out for help from the divine. Mm-hmm. And it eventually comes, but it's the own divine spark within Sophia that brings her back home. And I think we all have that. No matter how much we're lost in darkness, we're following that thread through the labyrinth back to where we came from and knowing who we really are.
Well, our whole Western civilization, though, is lost in that darkness. I mean, look at the state we're in. We have the capabilities and technologies to really live in a beautiful world with the equal distribution of wealth and food, and everyone can have shelter and clothing and abundance. We have that technology. We have the planet for that, and yet we're lost in this awful greed and darkness. And how are we as a collective consciousness going to follow that thread back home?
I'd actually like to, at this point, bring in my Electric Jesus workshops.
Please.
That I do.
Okay. No, it's just a question I throw out, because I think that's a great point, and I just kind of took that individual perspective, and you know, it's, we're really caught there at this moment in history. So, yeah, what is the Electric Jesus?
Right, well, just to go, I start the presentation with where things went wrong, because remember, I'm coming from an activist background in the past, and so I started having many, many mystical experiences, and to my surprise, Jesus kept popping up in my life, and that was the last thing I was expecting. But it was a much different Jesus than you hear from Orthodox Church or evangelicals. In fact, the weird thing is, though, it's more fundamental than all of those. It goes back to the very beginning and basics, which later on I'd like to talk about, because I just think a lot of the problems with religion we see is from 2,000 years of really just horrible, lazy translations.
Yeah.
But my whole Electric Jesus starts off with where things went wrong, and I was following this myth or this paradigm of domination, destruction, hierarchies, that, and I kept following it back through various dictatorships and, you know, Nazi Germany, Rome, da-da-da, and I ended up at the Garden of Eden myth.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people cite this is when we went from tribalism or tribal cultures, where everyone belongs, you're in harmony with nature, to civilization, where suddenly you have this knowledge of good and evil, but you're separate. You're separate from nature. You're separate from God. It's patriarchal. And this happened in the Fertile Crescent, that whole story, which makes a lot of scholars believe this is a story of the agricultural revolution.
Right.
So if you follow that myth... Oh, I'm sorry, Alan. Yeah.
No, this got the agricultural revolution. We went from wanderers, gatherers, hunters and gatherers, into agricultural, so we say.
But if these feelings of where civilization started, of abandonment, patriarchy, scarcity, fight to survive, all of these things, and it spreads out across the planet, suddenly you have a very deep problem, which is, I think, what you were alluding to now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The biosphere is, in serious trouble, and I look at my own spiritual path and find a lot of hope, because I was told everything was going to end. Nobody could cure me. I was going to be sick forever, and then suddenly I believe in miracles. And this is why I'm so happy with all the energy healers and people going through these transformations, because I don't think it's really a miracle at all, but I think we're collectively creating what many people would perceive as a miracle.
So then, we're back in the Garden of Eden, and we follow that thread a little bit.
Well, I was searching for a paradigm shift when I was looking at the Garden of Eden, because I thought, if things started out back then, how could we possibly change anything? It has to be a Galileo-style paradigm shift where you look at everything in the world differently.
Right.
And for me, that happened on my 30th birthday when I had a very magical night and I was laying in bed and I felt this presence kind of come to me, which I now recognize as my spirit guides.
Uh-huh.
And poof.
Or your spirit, was it your spirit guide or was it your actual spirit itself?
It was kind of my spirit guides reminding me of my actual spirit.
Okay.
They were just turning on the lights, literally, because after that moment, I could see energetic fields around people. Or some people would call that auras, or in the Christian tradition, you see that as halos.
Right.
And then I started pursuing this energy and seeing who was talking about energy way back when, and it turns out everybody was.
Give us some examples.
Well, first of all, just look at the paintings of Buddha, Krishna, Shiva, Kali. They all have this auric field around them.
Yeah, it's true.
They're all. I feel like these artists were messaging to anyone that was having kind of mystical experiences like me, like, look, you're not crazy. This is actually out there. You just have to, it just requires a little shift in your limited consciousness.
So what you're saying to me is what's sparking is that these are our natural abilities, and somehow we've been conditioned out of using them because of the shutdown of the culture that we're living in. And there's a new awakening of people like you and lots of people to these just natural abilities to see energy, to feel energy.
Right, and I do believe, indigenous cultures, we're much more in tune with this, but I also feel like this is kind of the game of forgetfulness, is in the Garden of Eden, you have the snake, which is thought to be Kundalini, and all of these things going into materialization. And when it comes back up, the Tree of Life, which is also known as the spine, and the Tree of Life exists in Gnostic circles, in Kabbalah, in yogic, when you go back up, you come back into awareness.
Right, and the snake exists in all those traditions as well.
So
you're back and you're looking for a new paradigm. You realize that it's that idyllic sense of connected to the garden, the natural state of ourselves. I think that's where. And then what was the next step in that process for you?
For me, it was to learn about the energy system and to find out, one, that string theory says the whole universe is energy. There's 12 dimensions out there. On a good day, I think we can only see 3 to maybe 4. And it's suddenly, we can only see 96% of, or 4% of the universe. The rest is just dark energy or dark matter.
Okay.
So I studied the energy systems out there with the chakras and 7. And you see the 7 chakras. You see that everywhere.
Right.
And that led me to come to the each one of these systems, chakras, is related to a gland. And the seventh chakra is the pineal gland, which has, everyone's carrying this psychedelic substance in their bodies and doesn't know it, called DMT, which is released at birth and at death.
Uh-huh.
And when I learned this, I found out that there were these shamans in the Amazon who knew this for thousands of years, and they would go on journeys, mystical journeys, with the spirit vine called ayahuasca.
Right.
And so my next kind of opening paradigm shift moment came from going on a journey with ayahuasca.
And what was that? I've done that too, but what was your experience?
My experience was, my spirit guides were giggling and saying hello, and that they've waited a very long time for this reunion tour with me, and they were very happy.
Mm-hmm.
They came down and spun all my chakras at a very fast rate, where it no longer felt like this mystical, spiritual, it felt like wheels, actual wheels spinning extremely fast. Mm-hmm. I came out of my body. I had a look at my past life that had happened and was told that I had done a good job in this life, that I chose to be born to my mom to get over those issues, mm-hmm. and because there was a lot of healing that had to go on there, and it was time to move on. And then, poof, I pop back in my body, and I see myself as three incarnations of humanity. One was as us, as a tribal culture, and I was like a half-human, half-bear on a stone throne. The second one was us as a civilized culture, and it was like a half-lion, half-human, and a gilded throne.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a future one of this half-human, half-snake on a invisible pedestal, and it was non-dualistic, highly sophisticated, and this snake was like a big question mark for me because it went back to my whole Garden of Eden quest.
Mm.
And the next time I did ayahuasca, and this is pretty much the last time, was my spirit guides came back giggling and said, "You're not going to believe this one, but this is what you've always been wondering and what you've always wanted to know." And I was taken up on this lotus flower. I had never really known what a lotus flower looked like, but there it was. And I was brought into this beautiful white light, and the spirit guides said, "Hey, you are enlightened. You've just forgotten it, and it's time to remember now." And I could feel that loving light energy that was everywhere in me. And I just sat there remembering that.
And so you came out of the experience then, and then where was Jesus in all this? Because you also talked.
Well, Jesus, throughout, people kept coming up to me and talking about him and going along this path. I was actually partly cured in Prague, dealing with the infant baby Jesus of Prague, which is known to give miracles
throughout
history.
Was there a statue of the infant baby Jesus?
Yeah, and it's actually a really scary-looking statue, I have to tell you. It looks about 3 or 4 years old in height, but about 30 in attitude and very angry. It's got very, like, severe eyes, but people across the planet swear that it has this vibration that grants miracles, and people will often like get little swathes of the its clothing, or they used to, for healing purposes or what have you.
I believe that. I've seen some amazing statues animate before, so I totally am believing it. So then you started to, so after that last ayahuasca trip, and you started to get these kind of cues sort of from Jesus, was there like one big revelation where you kind of connected with the Jesus energy?
Well, I mean, when I was having that experience of being brought into like feeling what enlightenment was like, they actually said, "This is the Jesus energy you've always wondered about." And the Gnostics don't talk about, like, Jesus as the only Son of God. It's the Christos, the divine energy that's in all of us, that brings us back to who we are.
Right.
And I actually did have some moments, like, one time I was at just your regular party, not doing anything, and my spirit guide said, "Hey, look to the left." And I looked to the left, and there's this projection that said, "Dream Enlightenment." And suddenly, it was like another plane of existence was coming into my perception that I'd never seen before, but I knew it had always been there, and I just somehow had missed it. Mm-hmm. And I just saw that everything around me was the same, like it was all this grid of white light, and we were all just actors and actresses the white light could play with, in a way. And no longer could I see good or bad, you know, villains and good guys, because I just saw that we were all these beautiful divine Shakespeares making this wonderful game we call the Manifest Universe.
Do you still have that experience of the world?
What's that?
Is that still with you, or did it fade away?
You know, I get these glimmers, and then it's a lot of meditation and work in between.
Right. So where does electric Jesus come in?
Well, it comes with the idea of, I believe very strongly that Jesus was an energy healer. He goes around healing people all the time. He'll constantly say, be open, when he heals them, which, you know, opening chakras and energy circuits is, I think, the key to most healing. There's a woman that's been menstruating for 12 years, and she touches him, and in the New Testament, it says the energy drains, the power drains from him and into her, which seems like energy transference to me.
Right.
Also, just things like in the baptism, the Spirit descends like a dove into him, and you can see this downward current of universal energy coming into him. Baptism, the word the water they use for it, it's actually moving water, which a lot of people think means energy. And also the Holy Spirit, Jesus, when he brings what's called the Advocate to the disciples in the Gospel of John, he breathes on them to give them the Holy Spirit. And the word pneuma, the highest Gnostics were the pneumatics. They were ones of breath of life.
Would they live on breath and air?
Well, they were called the illuminated.
Huh.
So I think it's light, and, you know, it's all kind of the same. The breath is the light.
I've never heard of the pneumas or the pneumatics. Where is that written? In which document?
I mean, probably the best place to find this is just Elaine Pagel's The Gnostic Gospels. They'll talk about it a lot.
Okay, it's in there.
Yeah, but the study of the Holy Spirit is pneumatology.
It's pure breath. Well, doesn't that go, I think it goes back to the ancient Hebrews, whose name for God was just really the breath itself. I mean, supposedly some Kabbalists say there were no vowels in Hebrew because it had to do with the movement of breath.
Yeah.
That was the secret codes to the names of God, which were really like mantras that activated a greater part of our own awakening.
Absolutely. In Gnostics, you will see, especially like the Peace to Sophia, there'll be a long list of vowels, just like they use in yogic cultures to open up the chakras and release energy. It'll say like A-E-O, and you would chant these to have transformative experiences.
Right. I interviewed someone, J.J. Hertog, who had a new translation of the Pista Sophia from the Coptic, and I couldn't really get. This was Jesus' encounter with the goddess Sophia, right?
Well, yes, in a way. I mean, Sophia comes down to Earth, and then Jesus comes down as this kind of Christos being to help bring her back and remind her who she is.
Right, because Sophia gets trapped and enslaved almost by the other forces.
Right, which I mean, a lot of Gnostics look at that's kind of our own journey that they're discussing. That.
Well, isn't that where we are right now? The reemergence of the feminine.
Oh, well, and this is a huge part of my Electric Jesus presentation is many yogis around the world think we're moving from that third chakra, masculine about power and will and control, which when in balance is a very good thing, but if not, it can be out of control, and moving up into the heart chakra, which is feminine, And if you've seen the Sacred Heart of Jesus, have you ever seen those?
Where Jesus points. Yeah, I somehow really resonate. I mean, I'm not into Jesus now, but there is something really loving about those pictures of Jesus pointing to that huge, you know, heart of him.
Well, I think it's the same as the Buddha, too. You know the word resurrect just means to awaken, to rise from sleep.
Oh.
And the Gnostics say we're lost in drunkenness. And I actually, if I can take a little tangent and show you just how loving Jesus is and the misrepresentations that make me so sad, just very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The word sin just means missing the mark from
in
its
what
Greek
language?
Term. Greek. Most of this is Greek since the New Testament. So it's missing the mark. Repent, it just means having a change of consciousness. So, you know, like you had me meet Paul, what's his name, Paul Lowe?
Paul Lowe, yeah.
He was vibrating on such a level that I left there having a change of consciousness.
Wow, yeah.
Satan means adversary. So, you know,
Satan
what's our adversary on our... What's that?
No, it means Satan means adversary.
Yeah, so what's our adversary on our spiritual path, you know? In the word Gehenna, it's just a trash dump in Israel where they burn stuff. I mean, Jesus knows about karma. There's tons of karmic teachings throughout the Gnostic text and the New Testament. So he understood if you do bad things or you think these things, you can end up metaphorically in bad places. I know I have in my life.
Right, and that's what missing the mark is. When you miss the mark, you kind of miss your own standards. You kind of fall short of what you know to be true. That's what I think. There's no sin out there. It's just, are we living to our potential or not? That's really what I think missing the mark. And then it's only up our business anyway. So Jesus was a teacher of consciousness, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And I think he was a teacher of universal compassion. I mean, the Messiah was supposed to be this kind of warrior king that reclaimed Israel. And what this, you know, what Jesus goes around doing in this story is healing people. You know, his only law really is love yourself like, you love your neighbor like you would love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's all about the heart. Also, if you notice, the cross is thought to be a symbol of the body, and if you hold your arms out and you put them right in the center, it's right at the heart chakra.
Yeah, I also think it's... there's a whole book called The Symbolism of the Cross, which is a beautiful book about many levels of that symbol, where it's actually the meeting of the time and space, the vertical and the horizontal axis in the moment, in the present moment of now. There's a lot that... just in the immediate psychological identification with symbols brings us back into the center of who we are. And it's, and like all these terms, you're saying they've been co-opted by the church to sort of manipulate and control us.
Right, but these are universal teachings. Everyone taught them. Like you were talking about the cross, and it just made me think, Alan, how that's a symbol across the planet. It's not just unique to Jesus. The cross was in Mayan culture, the Celtic cross, which has a double helix going up it, which I think find really incredible. Because, I mean, I don't think they knew about DNA or the double helix nebula. That was like 2,000 years before Jesus was around.
Huh. So where is, like, the electric part?
Well, the electro part is all about seeing ourselves as energy bodies, as electrical beings. And that our actual ways we think affects our circuitry and how that energy interacts with each other. And to be very conscious of who we are as electric beings and the spiritual electrical alchemy that's necessary to move forward in our lives and to release karma and to really expand into the much greater circuit of our realities.
Well, what's a good example of that? I mean, it sounds good, but how? Give us something to really work with.
Well, I have lots of... I think meditation is such a key. I do a lot of kind of bringing the kundalini energy up very safely through the
body
and into the chakras, through breath, through sound, a lot of different breathing techniques. There's a lot of great books out there for like safe Kundalini yoga. I think John Shelby's a really great one.
What book is that, John Shelby?
I think it's Kundalini Awakening. Something I don't recommend is there's a lot of people that teach about bringing the Kundalini and just shooting it up the spine and out.
Right.
And I think that takes a lot of practice. I am a much bigger believer in having the two poles of your body, just like there's two poles on the planet or there's two poles in any energy circuit, in circulating them. And the heart is the center of that. And I think what we're really aspiring to in a kind of a Christian, in the Christ consciousness way, is reaching that heart chakra energy. And what happens if you get on that vibrational, energetic level, electrical level, I think new realities open up. It's just like if you're only on AM, we're talking about these 12 dimensions of string theory. So if you're only on AM radio, you don't know there's FM out there. And the only way we can get this really great rock and roll is by expanding our consciousness and, like, loving the world and its duality and going beyond that.
So you're a real mystical, you're almost like not an old-time teacher, but it's like we have all these other elements. I mean, you're sharing love, which is, you know, that's universal, but then you're involving the political activity with the youth culture that probably can't relate to a lot of these concepts of love in the same way that you're communicating them. So, like, you're in a situation where you're, you know, involved in a community that you need to speak to it in a certain way for them to get that, these points. Now, how do you do that?
Well, it's about frames and understanding people's frames. I've been practicing this a lot. I think also the reason I'm so attracted to the Jesus story is that's our creation myth to a large degree in Western culture, or it's something everyone knows and has somehow have it a part of their story. And so it's very strong. And I'm especially concerned about rising fundamentalism. And so what I like to do, and I think this is a very shamanistic trick, is you go into these, put on the clothes of people in a way that people will understand you.
Uh-huh.
And so by talking about Jesus, I can get a lot across a lot more to, say, an evangelical Christian than if I talked about Buddhism or something.
So you're
like that.
Reaching out to these masses that have been controlled by a dogmatic religion and sort of opening a door for them to look at something differently.
And I think it's really important right now because the great thing about people who are already religious is, unlike me, you don't have to convince them there's a God out there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to convince them there's a spiritual universe. I mean, I was like a devout atheist. It took me being broken apart and coming back together again.
But I think it's almost, I wouldn't say it's bad, but it's like they think that God is out there, but they don't really realize that God is also in here. And that's like the key element I think the fundamentalists are missing, that they are the emanations of God as well.
Yeah, it makes me think of this Gospel of Thomas line, beware of the Sadducees and Pharisees. They have stolen the kingdoms to heaven. The kingdom to heaven, they don't use it, nor do they allow anyone else to. Therefore, you have to be as sly as snakes and as secret as doves, or in as simple as doves.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I want to be, as simple as a dove and as sly as a snake when trying to help people open up spiritually. You know?
But how do you get people to realize that God is not out there as a judgmental overlord, you know, damning people and putting them in hell, when that is their core worldview, paradigm way of looking at reality, you know? How do you get that? You have sort of an in with the Jesus thing, but how do you get them to really come out and see that they are love?
Oh, well, I mean, I think that's hard because there you're dealing with some really strong egoic factors.
Right.
And I mean, this is all about overcoming the ego. So talk about adversary, right? There's our adversary. And what a great way to stand up, like, and be challenged. So what I try to do is talk to them on their own terms. And the Holy Spirit seems to be a great way because everyone seems to experience the Holy Spirit in everything.
Right.
But then if they open up more and more, I'll eventually say, have you checked out these words? And I'll talk about the true definition of resurrection, anastasis, or the real definition of sin. And these things are one Google away. It's not like in the past where the church could only be the only ones that read this and they're speaking in Latin. I mean, all of these answers are just a Google search away.
But you know what I find, not just in fundamental Christians, but in like Republicans or Democrats or baseball fanatics or whatever group you're talking to that so much believe the world is a certain way that they are, it doesn't matter what that way is, they are so, even scientists, they are so, even people who don't believe in UFOs, even the scientists that denounce it, or any of the, they're so into the world being this way, it's actually impossible for them to see it any other way. And they, even logical argument, there's an article that was in the Times a couple of years ago that say, even logical arguments they'll discount because to pull the rug out of their reality means that their ego structure dissolves.
Right.
This is what Don Juan was saying to Castaneda, that we keep talking to ourselves and arranging the world the way we think it is because that's the only way we find stability as an ego personality. So that's what I'm saying to you. How do you get people to become the new reality when on all levels of consciousness, they're so attached to the old reality.
Right. And, you know, this is what I feel very strongly about right now, is not trying to win over people that are, like, that seem on the far end of that. Because I feel like people are starting to waken up, but they're waking up in what's closest to them. And then we're all reaching a hand. There's, like, a hand up and a hand down. And we're in circles doing this. And I feel very grateful for all those people that are helping me up. And I have a hand down to those that are maybe just a step like where I was just at. And I don't think I can fully reach out there very well. But I know something I can really help with and have seen is people who have grew up with, like, in a Catholic church or with a fundamentalist background and are kind of broken from it or trying to heal from it. I've seen them come to our Gnostic groups and just open up and be thankful. And instead of being against this religion, suddenly they're like, they see it for its deeper truths and have healed over it. And myself have healed from it too.
Well, I think your Gnostic angle is really sort of, I mean, now that I think about it, is a really key in to this whole shift of consciousness, because the Gnostics did discover the truth of who they were within the context of that paradigm, of a kind of Jesus paradigm, in a sense. Although they probably predate the Jesus myth, that story. They discovered their inner knowing, gnosis, as their divine connection to the source. So I think, opening up the Gnostic, angle probably is a great way to do it. Can you talk a little bit about the Gnostics and how they discovered the truth of what was really happening?
You mean their techniques, or
the technique? But how did they actually, realize the gnosis itself?
Was there a way?
I mean, was it just through these parables? I mean, they must have been enlightened, awake, and some of them anyway.
Oh, I think there's very strong evidence that they were. Just from the way they teach, they will talk about these very strong experiences of going into what they call the depth or the ultimate or fullness. So absolutely, there's so much evidence, like the gospel of truth and these things that they were experiencing it. But, and most people think it was an initiate. I think it's most likely, if not definitely, a mystery school. So it's a school of initiations that you go through. And Jesus himself said, you know, to his disciples, to you I have given the secret of heaven. To everyone else I have given it in parables. Mm-hmm. And so the way this mystery school works is, in the beginning, when you're on the outside, you learn, oh, Jesus was a real person, da, da, da. And as you go further in, you learn that his journey is your own journey. It's an allegory for your mystical movement through this mystery school. And these mystery schools were around long before Jesus. There was Mithras, there was Osiris, there was Dionysus, and it all had the dying, resurrecting God-man as like the last ritual in it. In the first ones, there's baptism, there's anointing, there's a Eucharist, and then you have that ritual at the end.
They're all symbols of the evolving consciousness as well, because the ego has to die in order to be reborn as a super consciousness.
Absolutely. I just read the Liturgy of Mithras, and they were talking about being born again, just as if it were... and I, supposedly Catholic Masses are very much taken from the Mithras stories, because when Rome, Constantine converted it, Rome into Christianity, they just kind of took a lot of these other, what was quote-unquote pagan rituals and put Christian ones in there.
Right. And do you think that probably all went back to the Egyptian? When I went to a high Catholic Mass, it seemed very Egyptian with the high hat and the frankincense and the altar. It felt really like it was in some ancient Egyptian temple.
Oh, yeah. And this brings up one of my favorite characters in history, Pythagoras, because he was a scientist, a mystic, just one of these universal, you know, learners and seekers. And he is thought to be the one who brought brought that mystery school, the Osiris Mystery School, up into Greece.
I see. He brought the Osiris Mystery School in, and then it transmuted into the Mithraic Mysteries in Rome from Greece. And probably, well, they had lots of mysteries in Greece. They had the Orphean Mysteries, where some people said they did a hallucinogenic substance there at Delphi,
mm-hmm.
at the Oracle there. People would come for the mysteries of the Oracle, and they would kind of be guided by great shamans into the land of the gods in order to have these revelations.
Yeah.
So, what about the? There's just a few more things I'd like to ask you about as far as like the Jesus story and the connection to Mary Magdalene and. That seems to be a part that's coming forward now, that Jesus probably, as a realized being, had a partner, don't you think?
Well, hello, Alan? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I think many Gnostics, though, one of the things I think we learn is not to take things as absolute, like think of them archetypally, or so to say Jesus, the real person, married Mary, we don't want to limit it that way. We're like, that's one of many possibilities in an infinite
right.
universe. But they do have this idea of, for everything, their whole cosmology involves these, it's called like the, it's got eons in it, or aeons, that are kind of these divisions of the universe, and in each one there's a masculine and feminine element.
I see.
And Sophia actually got in trouble because she acted without the masculine element. And so in a lot of Gnostic beliefs, Mary's just, she's the, you know, counterpoint to Jesus. She's the feminine, he's the masculine energy.
Mary Magdalene or Mary the Mother, or were they...
Mary Magdalene, yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
And like the Sophian Gnostics are very big into that.
Into Mary Magdalene.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy with like the Da Vinci Code, whether you know that bloodline is real or not. It challenged people in what they thought, and it brought back the goddess feminine energy that is so strong in all the mystery schools.
And what's resurging here, I think the 2000 millennium 2, I don't know, I'm not really into numerology, but it just seems like 2 is a feminine number of receptivity, and it's return of that feminine principle, and you know, even with Hillary Clinton running for president, even though she's pretty mainstream politician, it's a symbol. And I think what you're saying about whether or not Jesus was married, it's the Gnostics take everything as a symbolic reality as opposed to what fundamentalists do, which is really take it as a actual reality.
Yeah. I feel like that's happening. A feminine energy is moving into the planet, and we've just completed several thousand years of this masculine push forward, And I think we're all ready to go back home a little bit and take a little bit of a rest. But this time, with quite a bit of knowledge, we went from planting seeds in the ground, which is a near miracle, really, taking on this act of the gods, to seeing 14 billion years to the beginnings of the universe. It's been quite a trip.
I think so. No, I think that's a great way to kind of end the dialogue, or kind of... So, now, just to describe your... You do performances of the Electric Jesus, or are they more lectures?
I hold workshops. So part of it's a presentation, but it's a journey we all go on, because I learn stuff from it. And then the last portion of it's a really nice meditation to actually feel how we can move these energies through our body.
It's great. I think, I mean, just, I didn't realize, I mean, just because I know you from around town, how spiritually connected you were to just the love energy, really. You know?
I'm trying. You know, it's all the process we're going through.
I know you're shy, and you sort of kind of fit in with, like, everyone else in, like, the crowd and the scene. It's like this other piece is really there, and I don't know. Yeah, you kind of keep it under a guard or back, or I mean, I guess you don't want to just hug and kiss everybody, or but I don't know. I think it's great, and I think someone like you who's in that mix of certain, you know, communities can open people up to this other level. And I think, you know, I think by making it sort of punk, Electric Jesus, people at least come towards it and say, okay, yeah, I know Jesus, and what's this other part of it? So
right, the Warrior of Words thing that I was talking about. Yeah.
So where are you going to be doing your Electric Jesus thing?
Oh, right. Wow, I actually meant to get that information out, but I was a little rushed. The Theosophical Society?
Oh, yeah, the one on 53rd Street?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it's on Sunday, January 9th.
January 9th, that's, I think it's, if people look up Quest Bookstores, right next to the Quest Bookstore.
Yeah, and it'll be right there. It should be a really great time. Lots of fun pictures and stuff. A lot of them Alan showed me, so.
Okay, yeah, my alchemical lecture, yeah. What time is that? Because I'll come.
I think it's at noon. But like I said, just go to the Quest Books. Like you said, go to the Quest Books website, and it'll be there. And Alan, I can just email you.
Right. I'll put that up on my whole listings of events on newrealities.com. You know, that people can find out everything that's happening in New York of spiritual significance at newrealities.com. So I'll definitely put that up there. Can you send me an email about that, Jonathan?
I will do, and thank you so much.
Do you have a website or something that people can find you? Because I really appreciate you revealing, you know, and opening up this vulnerable part of you, because there's a lot that I never knew about you that came out. So how can people find you?
They can check me out at, because I'm the community director at realitysandwich.com. My information's there, and contact info and stuff like that.
Okay, so maybe I'll just go out with this song called the Song of the Soul. Do you know that song?
I don't.
I sort of played a little bit of it in the beginning of the show by Chris Williamson. Chris Williamson. It was kind of big in the 60s, but I'll play that now. And thank you. I just want to say I'm Alan Steinfeld, and I've been talking to Jonathan Phillips. And if you have any questions about this show or any of the other programs in the archives, you go to archives under bbsradio.com. You can see a whole list of programs, or you could check me out on YouTube. If you go to YouTube/New Realities, or just type in Alan Steinfeld, A-L-A-N-S-T-E-I-N-F-E-L-D, you can just see all my interviews there. And you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. So I'm going to play this song, and thank you, Jonathan, for being a guest.
Oh, thank you, Alan. Always a delight to talk to you.
Thank you. See you soon. I am not dying, I am not dying, I am not dying.
This is Jeff from Electron Love Theory, and you're listening to BBS Radio. You can hear Electron Love Theory's new album, Colors of the Galaxy, right here. Check it out further on our website, which is lovetheory.com. We're on iTunes or CD Baby. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com, the number one internet radio network on the planet, in the galaxy, and in the universe.
They're starting to. Maybe they don't want to. But
well, you still have fans here, you know? This is for all the fans in Germany, actually. This is Senior Sieber calling. I don't need to tell who I am because everybody here knows it anyway. But there's German fans who really want to hear Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show on bbsradio.com.